I certainly respect their feelings. I think they've each worked very, very hard as citizens without any really adequate compensation to perform an impossible task. And I think perhaps that statement that they no longer wish to serve in that mission impossible, I can certainly appreciate. I think our responsibility is to fund the board, to give them the means that they need to perform their job, and not to abolish it. That's the reason for my motion. And perhaps we should hear from a member of the board as well, who certainly I would defer to in terms of representing the sentiments of those individuals. Or
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm George Reeves, member of the State Engine Defense Board at the moment. I think it is too strong a term, Representative Bauman, to suggest that the members of the board are advocating the abolition of the board. I don't believe that the abolition of the board had occurred to the members of the board. It was something that apparently came out of some committee in which the board had no participation whatsoever. And we heard about it before the Ways and Means Subcommittee hearing started, as far as the board is concerned. Once the matter was placed in that context, and we perceived that the emphasis that was so strongly on cost, and that there was some perception that the board had failed to perform its job because it had not come in with cost reductions, I think then Representative Springer's statement accurately expresses the attitude of the members of the board. I would only add to that that based upon the year and a half that we have wrestled with this problem, I doubt very seriously that the solution to cost lies in the particular body to whom you give the responsibility for the administration of the program. The difficult problems of controlling those costs will continue if it's under the board's aegis or if it's under the state court administrator. And the I last night reviewed the minutes of the board meeting. This is my file of our minutes. And I just flipped through that, and I would guess that more than half of our minutes deal with the problem of the deficit that we were trying to handle last year, clearly diverted the board from performing some of the functions that it would otherwise have got to. So I think that Representative Springer has stated the attitude of the board very accurately. I would just throw in a note of caution that whatever you do, the basic problems are not going to be solved by the form of administration that you prescribe.
May I add something? I do want to comment on one aspect that has occurred to me and that I have experienced, and that is that as Mr. Reeves, who has put in more hours than any other member of the board, has stated before the Ways and Means Committee, that the task which is given to volunteer board members who have other occupational commitments is more than they can be expected to meet, given the nature, scope, and complexity of the problems Mr. Reeves has referred to himself as being retired. If his retirement, I'm sure, has his joy of retirement has been substantially diminished by the responsibilities which he has shouldered for the board. Part of my concern was that I felt and still believe that once a database is established and a policy is worked out for adjusting to the levels of costs that are going to necessarily have to be met and controls are in place, then I think it is appropriate to reestablish the board to meet the problems for which the board was in fact created and which have not gone away. I agree that as I've stated before, that the reason for the board has not diminished, and the more I've gotten into this, the more I feel that some agency between the lawyers, judges, and defendants continues to be appropriate. My concern is that where you are adding 6 additional people who will be on duty to aid in the gathering of the base and monitoring, that the administration of that kind of operation, resulting in the creation of policies and recommendations to the next legislature, can probably best be done by a tightly run and efficient administration, and not certainly comfortably done, nor even willingly done, by present board members. There has already been some talk at the last meeting of resignation, and I asked the members of the board to stay on at least for the present until this matter was decided.
Mr. Lisa,
I have a real problem.
Okay, yes. We have a problem.
I'm sure.
We're under call the House, but before we depart, let me just. I'm ready to try a management number. Maybe when we come back, we can do that. There's some politics going on in this thing that disturbed me, in the sense, not what you're doing out here, but what happened, in the sense that I sense was going on.
Okay.
You've got a board of 7 members on it, and the real role, as I go back and read what they were set up to do, essentially, it was not necessarily to administer, obviously administration of the program was one part of it, but really they were asked to do something far more esoteric than that in coming up with some responses to the innocent situation. If the board is maintained, perhaps reduced in number or something, so that it could meet as a board that would have the administrative responsibilities placed still with the court administrator, but to continue to operate with that relationship in an interim capacity. You said, I believe, maybe we will come back in 2 years and we will find that we need to reestablish that once things are tightened up. What I think is being done here is we're looking around a little bit for not a scapegoat, but the reverse of that is let's give the goat to somebody else. And we've sort of dropped it over here on someone and said, here, fix this thing that doesn't have 2 humps or whatever the camel is that we created. Come back and give us a slick racehorse within a couple of years. And I'm concerned about that. And so, you know, is there a possibility or a rationale to maintaining the board at some level, but operate in conjunction with the court administrator to assist, and be able perhaps to draw on the kind of wisdom of the people we have in that board, come up with some of those more, excuse me, recalling those esoteric aspects of how we run this thing in the long run, rather than waiting until we've got the administration in line, then we back up and say, what do we want to do with the philosophy? And at that point, we're going to go in and call the House, and I'm going to let you respond.
Thank you.
Okay. Order, Alney. We're going to come back to us. We're going to have to go to a slightly different bill for a minute. I want to reopen 2190, if we could, just to make it really confusing, because we have heard from the gods of ways and means through Mr. Penn. Would you like to join us? Now, we did pass out that bill as amended with the -4 amendments. We did not adopt the -2 amendments, which were in discussion, and I think the district attorneys had an objection that that may have been misleading too. I mean, somebody in Ways and Means may have been misleading too. Anyway, Penn.
Dale Penn, Oregon District Attorney Association. I will say there is a defense to false swearing, and that is retraction in the same proceeding.
Okay.
After the hearing here a few moments ago, Mr. Lennon and I had proposed to go speak with Mr. Burke and Ken Jones, who is the fiscal officer involved in the budget. And I believe that after that discussion that I misunderstood exactly what was happening there. Ways and Means still believes it's not necessary that amendments be passed, and yet there is fiscal impact for the Judicial Department in a reserve fund. And in keeping with the spirit of the committee in trying to identify cost savings, I know that the District Attorney Association is prepared to acquiesce in those amendments, and my misunderstanding about the budget note is really in a different vein. And with that, and after talking to Mr. Jones and Mr. Burke, I would withdraw our objection to the dash two amendments, and we would have no objection to that, and I appreciate the indulgence of the committee.
I appreciate, Mr. Penn, your coming back to us with that matter and following up on that with the meeting. Given that information, since we reopened a work session on 2190, having already adopted the dash four amendments, I would entertain a motion to adopt the dash two amendments.
Could I ask a question?
Yes. Representative Phillips.
It's not your intention in adopting, if indeed we follow that path, dash two, to any way set aside previous adopted in three, that we'll ask council to make the system work together? Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. Very good. Yeah, but that was already incorporated in, so.
Okay. Is there a motion on the dash two amendments?
I would so move.
Representative Phillips moves to amend House Bill 2190, previously amended, with the dash two amendments. Any discussion on that, on the amendments? Any objection to the amendments? There being none, we'll move that, and I guess that we need another motion to move House Bill 2190 as re-amended to the floor.
Chair, I would move the re-amended version of House Bill 2190 to the full committee with the due pass recommendation.
Okay, Representative Phillips moves the re-amended version of House Bill 2190 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Any discussion on that? Clerk, call the roll.
Nauman?
Aye.
Miller?
Aye.
Phillips?
Aye.
Springer?
Aye.
Burton?
Aye. Okay, thank you. Yeah, let's go back to 2869. Thank you, gentlemen, for your indulgence. If you want to, I'll come back up here. I have a question. I know I left you with a question, or maybe a statement, and I don't really know whether to ask for an answer to that. But I'd like to just do on line 15 of the dash four amendments. That's page one, which is in section two. Just for the record, Mr. Linden, your report to the Chief Justice.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Is it redundant to say subject to the direction of the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court?
Mr. Chairman, that's probably surplus language, because by statute right now I serve at the pleasure and supervision of the Chief Justice. I'm not certain that it needs to be reemphasized. It's a reality that under law right now the Chief Justice is the appointing authority.
But there's an appearance here that I'm concerned about, because we previously talked about a conflict of interest, and removing that as much as possible is something I think that's important, and perhaps that is some language that we could edit out that would help at least in trying to make clear that you have that responsibility, and it's not a court, as less of a court responsibility as we can make it.
Mr. Chairman, under the law before the board was created, it designated certain responsibilities for the state court administrator and did not have that kind of supervisory language.
Okay. That's just a minor question there. I don't know if you understood what I was saying dashing out of here, but I was trying to take a look at the possibility of going somewhere between leaving the board and eliminating the board and talking about, and reduction of size may not be the question, but I thought that at one time there was some testimony here about the fact that folks came from all over and that geographic spread is probably a good idea, but that makes it less functional in getting together. That if we reduce the size in that sense, there's then the question to me about whether in the current budget that's proposed, the positions that have been added, and I understand there is six positions that were added, if those are given to the court, or if they're in the budget to be there specific for indigent defense, and if we didn't eliminate the board, would those positions then be available to the board for staff?
Mr. Chairman, those positions were created to support the indigent defense program. So if the board stays intact, they go to the board. If the board is abolished, they go to the judicial department.
So why are we... I keep this thing, the nagging thing comes back into my mind again and again. Here, if we are, we're finally giving you some troops, and now we're going to sundry. Why are we doing that at this time? I know that you're probably fed up with us and them and everybody else, but I mean, what is the practical effect of eliminating the board? Does it save us any money?
In my opinion, Mr. Chairman, doing away with the board doesn't save you a significant amount of money. That's not where the problem, not where the basic problem is that gives rise to your costs. The form of administration as such, I think, is not determinative of your costs. The job that I think has been discussed most in the hearings before the Ways and Means Subcommittee is a matter of studying the system to see whether or not there is a better way to meet the state's constitutional obligation for providing indigent defense. Now, the board obviously didn't have the funds to make that study. In this biennium, the board put in its budget for the next biennium funds to enable it to employ outside experts of the experience and caliber that we felt would be essential to such a study. That study could possibly lead to a reduction in overall costs, but I don't think any of us knows the answer, whether it really would or not. Now, such a study can be undertaken, obviously, whether or not the program is under the state court administrator or under the board. The question really is whether or not whichever system or form you use, there is adequate staffing and funding to do the job that the legislature thinks needs to be done.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Bauman.
Here's the question. As part of your study, did you review the study that was evidently done? I haven't seen this, but I've heard that a study was done comparing the costs of Oregon's indigent defense program with those of other states.
Yes, I have seen that study and have reviewed it.
And I guess part of my question is, you know, having seen that study and I think that raises some fairly obvious questions about whether other states are having problems similar to these. Did that pique your curiosity to look at what other states have done, or where the problem areas are in other states, and what studies have been done in those states?
There's not, Representative Bauman, not an extensive study or analysis of that. I think that would be part of the study that we would have done. But my impression from reviewing that is that the problem is not unique to Oregon at all, and that other states are faced with similar problems. But that isn't to say that we cannot learn from what's being done elsewhere. But I would visualize as part of the study we had hoped to have made, we would have an analysis made of other systems. We simply have not had the manpower, woman power, to do that.
I guess I'm sitting here feeling sort of itchy, and it's not, has nothing to do with whether it's manpower or woman power. It has a whole lot to do with whether doing a study of a problem that seems that is right on top of us, and that also seems from, again, I understand the study showed that the problem in Oregon is not that we pay more per hour for defense counsel than other states. Is that an accurate?
I don't think we do.
I believe that the study that legislative research did comparing Oregon's costs with those of other states showed that we don't.
I think that's right.
So that evidently the problem is that there is too much enforcement and prosecution in the state, and if we would merely stop enforcing our laws or prosecuting criminals, that we could cut out indigent defense costs, but probably any other way we're not going to be able to.
I think that is correct, even without the kind of study that we hope to have made.
But do we have to pay? Excuse me, but do we have to pay for a study to show us that?
Well, I think we have to make such a study to satisfy the belief in some quarters that we have the opportunity to make real savings. The board has some empirical data without an extensive study that led it to believe that the payments that the costs overall were reasonable. And I'm referring here to the fact that appointed counsel are paid $30 an hour, and the courts monitor the number of hours that they will allow counsel to be paid for. And in Multnomah County, for example, they'll get usually about $120 for handling a misdemeanor. The judges ride herd on that, so there's some safeguards there. Under the contracts, we know the salary scales of the people who serve in the public defender offices. We know that they are not being overpaid. We know the number of cases that they handle during a year's time. We know that that number is at least as high, and in many cases higher, than the number of cases recommended by the American Bar Association as a proper load for defense counsel. We know all those things. It leads us to believe that changing the system in some way is not going to be the equivalent of waving a magic wand and lowering costs. To answer I'm not disagreeing with your statement that maybe you don't need such a study, but I think we felt the necessity of making one.
I'm just expressing frustration here. It just seems to me that at this point we know enough, and the difficulty is communicating what we know to a public that's unhappy, and we've got some unpleasant choices, and we can either become soft on crime and save ourselves the cost of so many cases. We can pay the bill, which is going up, or maybe there's some argument to be made for looking at the cost of crime and looking a little bit more seriously at front-end programs that somewhere down the line are going to prevent it from occurring. All of those seem to be messages that the public, might not want to hear, but might be willing to ask policymakers to make a decision upon. The only thing that I couldn't really justify at this point from everything I've heard is a study. It's a study.
Oh, I see.
That's my frustration.
Yeah, isn't it $106,000 that's been allocated in the budget? I'm at risk here, but I think there was probably some reasons for this, but there was some indication, I believe, that there was. Here we have a situation, again, where Ways and Means, it says here's $106,000, you'll do the study. That may have been a request in your budget, is that correct?
The $106,000, Mr. Chairman, was not solely for the study. About $60,000 to $70,000 was for the study. Then there was provision for audit and evaluation that took up the rest of it. But there was about $60,000 or $70,000 and therefore such a study.
There's a another thing, it's just in the sense of this, the timing right now, we seem to get, that's the problem of having biennial budgets, I guess, but in the sense of timing, contracts that are laying out there that need to be let, we're talking about we're within 45 days of that period of time and some work has to be done. That is now being done by who's beginning to work on next year's contract?
Our office has been receiving the
proposals. But you are the office when you say
yes,
our
yes,
office.
Yes, yeah, me. At the moment, no.
How are you doing?
I've got some volunteer help. We are presently doing some evaluation of the contracts. We've sent out the contracts for evaluation by the judges in each county. The judges have until next Monday or Tuesday, the 19th, I believe, to Monday, to return their evaluations to us along with trial court administrators. We hope within 11 days thereafter to make a recommendation to the board, if it's still extant, and then the board, as I recall, was going to have 15 days to consider the recommendation, and we're going to have two public meetings, the public meeting on June 1st, at which the recommendations of the administrator would be made, and then a meeting on June 15th, at which the board would act upon the recommendations. Each of these meetings, of course, they're public meetings, and people have an opportunity to get up and remonstrate. I've already had enough experience to know that that lawyers are like other people, only worse, in that they do not accept a decision that implies that some other lawyers' services or bids are more acceptable than theirs, without assuming that there's some skullduggery afoot, and I'm already aware of the kind of problems that the board may be faced with in reaching the final determination as to which bids to accept in certain counties. But that's a separate problem, and anybody has that problem. I want to have a chance to respond to Representative Bauman's question. The reason I think a study is justified is that there is an assumption that if all that is done is to provide minimally mandated services, in other words, if the lawyer does the least amount necessary for the representation of that client to meet the constitutional mandates of the Supreme Court, that will save us money. In fact, what I suspect we can demonstrate in a study which has for its evaluators outside persons who are expert in the field, we will probably have some showing that those offices are not necessarily more cost-effective who charge the least amount per case in terms of the total service which they provide. One of the reasons why a board is needed of some kind, some independent board, is that there is some agency needed as a spokesman or person for the quality of services rendered to the indigent, because, as I and others have said before, the quality of the services rendered to the indigent may have a lot to do with the total costs which dealing with that person is going to have for society. Again, quality service which searches out a job or an alternative program for a particular individual may be an enormous saving as against a minimally mandated service which just pleads that person guilty, doesn't oppose incarceration, which may be the worst thing that can happen, both in terms of cost and in terms of rehabilitation overall. I don't want to belabor the point. I've made the point. I think, however, that's just, we can't prove that at this moment. And so we are constantly besieged with a request that the bids of those which are cheapest are those that ought to be accepted without consideration of the other factors, without consideration of whether or not there are people on the staffs of some of the providers who are able to provide services which may be more cost-effective for society as a whole than the mere meeting of constitutional mandates. And we hope that an evaluation of that kind can silence or at least mute some of the objections that we have to the provision of quality services, which I think the board exists to provide in addition to meeting the constitutional mandate minimums.
Anderson Bauman?
I agree with the goal of discovering which combination of services attorneys can provide to their clients which will best serve their clients' needs, which is really what you're talking about. And I think that the counterpart to that is to articulate that standard so that the expectation is clear. And once it is articulated and the expectation is clear, make your RFP or whatever it's called, and then